Welcome to another teaching podcast from the Reinert Center for Teaching Excellence at St. Louis University. My name is Aaron Overby, and today we are talking about teaching large classes with Dr. Michael Lewis, a professor in the Department of Chemistry here at St. Louis University. Thank you for being here, Dr. Lewis.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
What is your own experience with large classes?
I have taught three large classes, or at least classes that I would define as large. I've taught two organic chemistry classes, Principles of Organic Chemistry 1 and 2, and that has been a while ago now. That was in the 2005-06 academic year. And then recently, this past fall of 2010, I taught essentially our high school chemistry class. It's called Basic Chemistry, and it's a class we offer for people who had a weak or no high school chemistry background. And it turns out the size of the class is also due to it being a relatively popular course with business majors for their science course. I think about half the students were the 18-year-olds with poor chemistry backgrounds from high school, and the other half was actually more like 22-year-old business majors looking to fulfill their science course. And so the Principles of Organic Chemistry ones a couple of years ago were 250 for Principles 1 and Principles of Organic Chemistry 2 about 200, and then this Basic Chemistry class this past semester about 150 people, just to begin with at least.
Okay, so you got 150, 200, and you had said how this is kind of how you understand a large class. Is there kind of a range that we can talk about when we're saying large classes?
I think with those two sizes, probably everybody would agree with me that those are large classes. I think maybe there's places in between, say 30 and, I don't know, 100, maybe, that you'd start to get discussions among people about the definition of a large class. As you know, I gave the CTE effective teaching seminar on this topic a couple weeks ago, and so I did some looking into the research on this, and you find the definition used by different schools and different people doing educational research for numbers of one over 100, some as high as 130 for large, small classes, something below 50, sometimes below 30. So I guess nobody actually talked. I couldn't find anybody at least talking about medium-sized classes. So I assume that's somewhere in between. At SLU, I think it becomes the definition might be a little more straightforward, or at least it is in chemistry, just because we don't tend to have a whole lot of classrooms in the middle. So you can find a lot of classrooms that'll seat, say, 40 and fewer, and then you have the three lecture halls, and you have Carlo Auditorium that seat over 200. I think one of the lecture halls might only be 175, but those are all much bigger. Then we don't have a whole lot in between, so I think that, and so I've taught in those larger ones with the larger classes, and in chemistry, certainly, we don't have a whole lot of 40, 50, 60, 70. We have 30 and below, and we have 150 and above, and pretty much nothing in between.
So what would you say are some of the perhaps unique challenges of teaching a large class like this, as opposed to some of your smaller classes?
Just getting to know the students is always a challenge, and you know, you can give lots of tips on getting to know people's names, making them feel at home, and their tips that are certainly not just for academics, but for any area of life and trying to learn people's names. There's administrative challenges, grading exams. Obviously, at least in chemistry, we're provided with teaching assistants, and so I use those as much as possible. And something as simple as handing back exams. So I consider that all administrative, putting exams into Excel sheets and into Blackboard. Those are non-trivial things, or at least those are not not things that take short amounts of time. If you have 250 students, it actually takes you a decent amount of time to just enter grades at that point. So if you're in a department that has research expectations on your time, or that has service expectations on your time, which at SLU is every department pretty much, you need to think about how you're effectively going to administer the class. And if you have TAs, that's what I would lean on them. That's my experience. And if you don't have TAs, I would think you have to start thinking about writing a lot more multiple choice type exams, doing a lot more things online where you can have them electronically graded. Unless you really don't have that much expectations on your time other than the teaching, because it can take a lot of time. Other challenges are, the primary other challenge, the big challenge that I find that makes it different than a small class is actually handing out grades at the end. You know, grades are very arbitrary, and you come up with a grade breakdown on your syllabus, and you hope that it works at the end. But if you have a small class, you always change it. If you had a grade cutoff for a certain grade at, say, 80%, and somebody got 80.1 and another person got 79.9, you'd probably change that grade so that those two people got the same letter grade, because they obviously knew the material to the same extent, and you'd find another place, say, close to 80%, that was a more logical cutoff. Maybe after that 79.9, there wasn't another student until 77% or 76%, and so you would just bump that 79.9 up to the 80.1. This is not possible when you have 250 people in your class. You literally have somebody at every approximately 0.1%, maybe 0.2%. You really can't think of 100% as being the range. Nobody gets zero, or few people get that low. If you figure 50 to 90% is kind of the normal range, at least in chemistry, that's kind of a normal range where I would say 95% of the people are between 50 and 90%. And if you have 250 people, you can do the math on that. It's somebody pretty much at every 0.1, 0.2%. And so that makes it difficult, because you will get lots of emails with people saying, I missed this cutoff by this very tiny amount. And so I prep people from the beginning and throughout the class on that I understand that grades are arbitrary, and that there's, as far as I've thought about it, no way around this. There's lots of other things that I've thought about in large classes, such as, well, I talked about giving exams and handing them back and getting to know people's names, and there are lots of tips, and maybe we can discuss some of those as we go forward here for addressing those types of issues and making the class feel smaller and so forth. But I still can't think of any way to make grades not arbitrary, such that somebody who gets an 80.1% gets a different grade than somebody who gets a 79.9% in a class of 250 people. It's always going to happen. Mm-hmm. So that I think is the most challenging aspect. It's the grades at the end.
It's interesting, because I don't think people might put that as one of the top challenges before they've actually been in the large classroom.
No, I never thought about it until the end. until the end of the first class I taught.
Yeah.
And I get a ton of emails. So now I prep people going in.
Yeah. Well, so you already kind of mentioned some of the other challenges and some of the solutions. What would you say are your top tips or strategies for dealing when you walk into a large class?
So you want to make the class feel small. You want to make them feel like they know you, like it is a smaller class, and not just an audience where there's some anonymous person. If people raise their hand to answer a question, or even just shout out the answer to a question, which often happens, I ask for their names. You should ask people, try and get people's names. And then going forward, when you finally get these people's names, you can refer to them throughout the class as so-and-so said 5 minutes ago, and so forth. And I try and work that into the class. I try and walk around so that when I'm asking questions, and I do pose questions quite a bit, even in large classes, I'm not always posing them from the same place. So you pose them from one end of one corner of the class, it's more likely that people in that corner are going to be the ones that answer you. If you walk around a bit, even in the large lecture halls, I wouldn't say I make it all the way up to the top of the stairs, but I certainly make it up 7 or 8 stairs routinely. So the people towards the middle and the back certainly see me up closer than they would just if I were up front. And then in a large class, I generally don't give back the exams. It's too big. I don't have my TAs to help me out with that, but I usually give them back in enough time for students to come up and ask me questions, so maybe with 15, 20 minutes left in the class. And you'll get dozens of people come up, and I look at every one of the names on those and try and put them with the face. If I see people walking on campus and they say hi to me and I don't know their name, the assumption I make is they're in that class, and so I ask for their name. And the great thing about doing that with a large class is nobody expects you to know their name. There's no expectation on you. And so that's good for two reasons. One, you can ask them their name and they're not insulted whatsoever. And then two, when you finally actually do know their name, they're really happy. That's, you know, there's a connection been made there. I'm sure there's not a lot of direct impact on the learning, but maybe that'll make them feel more at home, like the course more, show up more, who knows. It's all part of making students feel like that's a, you know, that it's more of a classroom and not just, like I said, an audience or a theater. So that's kind of with the questions. I guess one more thing to say about questions, because a lot of the name recognition for me is through questions, is I would encourage people to try and get class participation to the same amount, if not more, with a large class than they do with small classes, because you'll get more feedback. At least in my experience is you'll get more feedback, and it is because of that sense of anonymity that comes with a larger class. People are not afraid to shout out what might be an incorrect answer, because really most of the class can't see them. Mm-hmm. So I find in small classes you might say have 2, 3, 4 people who give all the answers, and when I teach small classes, I'll very routinely say, does anybody other than these two people have something to contribute here? And in a large class, I've never had to do that. I'll get lots of different people in the run of a class. So it's a good way to learn names. It's also a good teaching practice, I think, to get people to engage in the class. And I think larger classes sometimes lend themselves more to that, because people as much as it might not seem intuitive, I find people are sometimes more inclined mm-hmm. in a larger class because of that anonymity.
That's interesting.
So that's with a kind of learning names and class engagement. With the larger classes, the other aspects I do to help with just learning in general is try and get as much on Blackboard as possible or the internet as possible, links for them. And this is really something that I'm constantly aiming to improve upon. There's the challenge in teaching any class, small or large, is how pretty much everybody learns a different way, and you hope that the way you teach it is the way that reaches a majority of the people. And you know, the problem is if you come across that approach for the subject that the majority of the people get it, that's great if the minority then is a relatively small number. It's a lot, but in a large class, even if the minority is only 20%, a class of 250 people, 20% is still a lot of people that don't get it. And so offering people different ways to learn the material is key in any class, and certainly key in a large class, because like I said, a small percentage of people could still be a large number of people, and we all do learn different ways. So, I always like to have different ways to present material. I usually present it one, maybe two ways in class, and then if people come by my office, try and have another couple of ways to present it that maybe helps them out. And then on the internet or through the internet, have links to other methods to learn the material. And like I said, in a larger class, you're just going to run into a lot more people who don't learn the same way that, say, most of the people do, or learn the way that you feel most comfortable teaching it, and so forth. And really, having a variety of ways to teach the same principles really becomes very important in a large class.
Great.
that's, I think, all of our time for today. Thank you so much, Dr. Lewis, for talking with us today.
Great. Thank you. I'm very happy to do it.
This has been a teaching podcast from the Reinert Center for Teaching Excellence at St. Louis University. Have a great day.